How can slaying a dragon help you learn a new language? Welcome to Gaining Advantage. Welcome to Gaining Advantage. We are using tabletop role-playing games like Dungeons & Dragons to help you make lives better. Recently, the Brazilian state of Rio Grande do Sul has been devastated by unprecedented floods. Over 420 cities have been affected, with more than 20,000 people in shelters, 330,000 displaced. The lives of nearly 2 million people have been upended, and the toll of those missing and deceased is still rising. Infrastructure has been destroyed, leaving many areas isolated and in desperate need of aid. This is where you come in. It's time to roll initiative. CZRPG, who is one of our friends who's based out of Brazil and directly affected by this, has put together the Rio Grande Flood Charity Bundle. It's a collection of fantastic tabletop role-playing game resources and comics valued at over $200 and is now available for just $20. By purchasing this bundle, you're not only getting a treasure trove of amazing content, but also directly supporting the flood victims in Rio Grande do Sul. Your contribution will make a real difference in helping families rebuild their lives and communities. And here's just a few highlights from the bundle. Time is of the essence. It's our adventure that uses time manipulation. It's Unstoppable Origins number one. It's a comic exploring the origins of characters in the Unstoppable Comics universe. If you haven't heard of it before, this is a great way to jump in and feed your comic hunger. Amazing Encounters in Places, The Hunt. This is made by CZRPG, where you face off against an alien hunter in a one-shot adventure. Plus, there's just lots of other adventures, supplements, resources, all kinds of amazing things to improve your game, made by just awesome creators. And every purchase is a step toward helping those in dire need, showing that our community is not just about games, but about making a tangible, positive impact in the world. So to support this effort and get your bundle, just go to rio.inclusiverpg.com, rio.inclusiverpg.com, and that link is in the show notes. This is your chance to be a real-world hero and get a great reward at the same time. Thank you in advance for your generosity, and to everyone who already purchased, thank you so much for your support. And now, let's get to our interview. A player character's known languages often don't make a big difference in a typical D&D game, but in real life, the player's known languages can be critical. So what about using D&D and other tabletop games to teach real-world languages? Today, I am thrilled to have Shane Dunkel, Language Pedagogy Specialist in the English Language Institute at the University of Chicago, who is doing precisely that. Welcome, Shane.
Welcome. Thank you for having me.
And so what would you like us to know about you personally, specifically speaking to the tabletop gaming crowd?
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to explore the topic with you. So basically, I'm a gamer first, an educator second. You know, I've been playing D&D since the mid-90s. My first role-playing game was actually Star Wars, the old West End games in 1988. And then I didn't actually get into D&D until about 1991 or 92. So I guess, that's been in my blood longer than my educational career and teaching career.
All right. So tell us about English Language Institute and how you started using tabletop games to teach English.
Yeah, sure. So like I said, I'm a gamer first. And at the English Language Institute, we are kind of the one-stop shop for all the international students here at the university. So we have speaking classes, we have writing classes, we have extracurriculars. I host a board game group every Friday with role-playing. And we have a conversation hour and a book club. So there's lots of opportunities for students to be able to use English and practice English. With me specifically, I'm kind of the speaking coordinator here. So I was teaching a lot of speaking classes, let's say intermediate level and higher level. And since students here tend to have a lot of grammar and a lot of vocabulary, we would focus a lot on culture and what's called pragmatics in the language sense, you know, when to use something like turn-taking or how to apologize or politeness strategies. And traditionally, on the last day of class in the higher level, I would bring a board game. I'm not sure if you can see, there's tons of board games here for my classes. And I would bring a board game, and we would play it. And they're usually speaking, and they're usually social deduction games like Coup or Werewolf. And I was noticing that students were, their English was improving more in those contexts rather than the role play contexts of just like, you know, you're at a bank or something. Or you're at a car dealership negotiating with the salesperson. I was noticing that their output, their spoken utterances in the board game and slash, you know, speaking game was more authentic than in the role plays I already had for the activities in class. So then I decided to do a big research study where I had a control group where I just did what I normally did. And then I had an experimental group in my classes where I used, you know, some speaking games to assess their English skills. And in, as I like to say, in two of the three contexts, the spoken board games, the social deduction game, social deduction games context, they were producing more authentic utterances. I went to YouTube, for example, that there's that old tabletop video on YouTube with Will Wheaton, and he would play games with other celebrities. And I was using them as like a baseline for the students to compare against. So then I was like, well, it's sold. Now I'm going to start bringing in more board games and more board games. And then, you know, just the students like it. Oh, this is a little anecdotal evidence, but the interesting thing was that at the end of the quarter, we are in the quarter system here, 8 weeks for us. And I asked students, like, did you have fun playing board games? They're like, yes. And like, did it feel your English got better playing board games? And they were like, yes. But then I asked them, like, well, do you want to play more board games in the class? They're like, no. And I was like, what? Why not? It improved your English. And they're like, well, it doesn't feel like we're learning. It just feels like we're playing board games. And I'm like, yeah, but that's when you were sounding the most, you know, authentic, you know. And so that's why I think there seems to be a hesitancy, because there's some what we call face validity. Like, it doesn't feel like you're learning if you're playing a game, which I would argue is completely wrong in so many contexts. That's what I'm trying to push here.
That's fantastic. Yeah, it's like, oh, well, you know, I'm paying for classes not to play games. And
right, yeah.
So yeah, it's just like, well, this couldn't possibly as good as, you know, something more formal and structured.
Yeah. They want to be able to, you know, take the notebook out and write down the stuff and then study that notebook later. And unfortunately, like, you know, speaking languages is messy, all languages. And yeah, and I think that the board game context was able to, you know, technically speaking, what's happening is that, like, when you play a board game, you're thinking about strategy and how I want to win, which means that for my students, they're not thinking about grammar and vocabulary. So then they're outputting exactly at their level because they're too busy thinking about how to win rather than what to say. And so I can see their real level. And yeah, and that's why I tried to let them know about, but they still were just like, no, we want to have tests and books. And I'm just like,
Wow. What a fantastic way to test, you know, for so many people that struggle with testing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And so much more, like you said, authentic. And yeah, you know, this is in a natural setting, you know, it's not sort of how much can you binge the night before the test.
Right, yeah.
This is, you're in a natural setting. We're actually gonna, it's practical where you'd actually use these skills and yeah, stuff. And you're testing in that setting.
And, correct, yeah. Oh, yeah. And that was, wow, that was the focus of my research, was actually on the assessment form of using board games, not the, like, you know, because I mean, in the class, I'll still do some other activities, but the actual assessment, how they output, is the board game, because that's the ultimate test where, like you said, they're doing something. And I always like to say that, you know, those speaking games test native speakers the same way too. Like, not everyone can do those games. Not everyone likes social deduction board games because they're hard. You have to have certain speaking skills in order to do that. So, like, instead of like board games where like sometimes you roll the dice and you're fighting the system of the game, or whatever perimeters the game has set up to win it, social deduction games are unique because there's a system, but really you're fighting against the other players. Like, are they lying or not lying? And then so those social deduction games get to like the core of speaking skills more than, you know, because we do board games for other things that were just fun, but it was those social deduction games in particular, and then role play, which I think we'll talk about later, that really opened some more doors for them to be able to improve their English but have fun while doing it.
Well, this also you know, it makes me think about hear these stories, and I mean, I literally just a couple days ago heard a conversation about someone who is getting a bad grade because they're partnered up with someone who's not putting the work in, and so they're suffering because of the partner, or they have to, you know, do extra and stuff. Well, here's a way that you can actually you know, partner up in a sense, have multiple people, but you're not going to suffer for someone else,
right?
But it gives you that interactive kind of aspect to it, which especially with language is really important.
Yeah. And the best part is, like, because it's a group activity, and like, obviously the person who wins gets the A because they won the game. But then the other people, the next time you play it, will copy them because they want to win. So they're going to copy the strategy that the winning person did. And the winning person is kind of like becomes the model of the of how they should use it in their context, the ESL context. And so then it's like automatically there's, again, face validity because they use the strategy they won. And so the lower level students, you know, I don't actually flunk people if they don't win the game. It's not like that at all. Mm-hmm. It's just more like, this is your level based on what you did in the game. And then, you know, and then what they'll do is they'll copy that winning person the next time and try to do that as well. So then it's like, yeah, you're teaching yourself, kind of, which is great.
Oh, wow. Okay. So, so any other differences in the language learning outcomes between traditional classroom activities and playing tabletop games? And, and then we'll bridge into role-playing games too.
Sure. So I think the biggest difference is again, it's this accessibility of their output. So, like, for example, in a traditional class, they're going to study grammar. They're going to study vocabulary. There's going to be a listening test. There's going to be a speaking test. There's going to be writing. You know, it's all leveled, and it's also very academic. You know, so the idea is that while the students are in a program at a university, they're studying academic English because they're going to go to their classes. They're going to listen to their professors, and then do that work. Board games and role-playing games, depending on the context, are a little trickier because, well, first of all, they're not academic, you know, so I have to go away from, I first have to bring students, like I said in the first part of our interview, that I have to bring them away. I have to sell them on the idea that what you're doing is learning. It could be academic, but like, academic just means politeness levels. It means register. So I have to do what's called scaffolding, where it's like, I set up the activity so that it exploits what they already know about learning English from their context. I'm introducing this new context, which is board games and role-playing games. And then I have to really, you know, methodically connect those two to justify why we're doing this when they want this. And, you know, so far, you know, it seems to work. you know, like I said, some of my research showed that while they have a problem with why they're playing the board games, they don't have a problem with playing board games. They like that. So maybe I could do a little better in the idea of this scaffolding where I have to connect what their expectations are to this. Whereas like with other activities, I don't need to do that. Like, I just take the academic context, I pull out an activity and we do it. And then they, you know, they say what they say. Whereas, like, again, the board game role playing, I have to really I have to really lay down the cobblestone path between those two so that they can walk freely back and forth. And I will fully admit that when I first started doing this, yeah, like students were just falling in the mud all the time. They're like, what is this? Why am I? Because the other thing I didn't think about was that not everyone plays board games, you know? So it's like, if I have a group of 15 students and four of them always play board games and two of them kind of play board games, but the rest have never really played board games, there's a harder sell for them to bring them into the board game community. Because I'm sure you, your listeners, everybody, me included, we all love board games. It's kind of like second nature for us to sit down and play a game. But that's not true for everybody in the world, right?
Right. Yeah, of course. You know, different cultures value different things. And
Exactly. Or even just some
communities. Yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly. But so, I think about the impact that playing role playing games had on just on my vocabulary. I mean, I could get into all different levels of academic, you know, history and you name it. But thinking specifically about learning language, for one, it's a completely different vocabulary set.
Right. Exactly.
And even the syntax is different. You know, I know when I'm typing and I say, I type something like, you have advantage on this roll. Like all my grammar checkers are like, you have an advantage. No.
Right. Yeah. So really quickly. Yes. I don't know if I'm jumping ahead, but so the way I hide that behind the GM curtain. So I talked about scaffolding before between just the idea of playing board games in the academic classroom. Yes, you're absolutely right that I think the first time I played it, I just launched like I would into role playing, and then that scared a lot of students because exactly what you said. What's advantage? And especially if they're playing a wizard, right? Because it's like spell level, spell slots. They're just like, what? Like, what is this craziness? You know? And so and then the second time I tried it, I just pulled all of that into my brain since I knew it. And so instead of saying you have advantage, I would say roll two of these dice. You know, and we're going to take the higher number. And then and that's much more accessible, right? So then the next, like after a month or two, I would say, oh, by the way, that thing, when you're rolling two dice and taking the higher, we call that advantage, you know? So it just means you're getting a better hit or a better something when you roll the two. And then I would say like, oh, guess what happens if you take the two dice and you have to take the lower of the two ones? What do you think that's called? They're like, oh, is that disadvantage? I'm like, yeah, see, you got it.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're right. That like that role-playing vocabulary, if a person is into it, yeah, we can open up the GM and the player's guidebook and then go into it, no problem. But again, role playing tends to be like in its own community. And so when we're introducing people to that community, I try to keep all that in my brain and just have them do things and then later assign all of the names and the rules to that stuff. Which unfortunately means like, yeah, I usually encourage new players not to be a wizard, even though they want to be. I'm like, well, you can try, but I'm just going to let you know there's a lot of stuff that they'll have to keep, you know, and they're like, I want to do the spells. And I'm like, okay. And then I am usually the one behind the DM screen keeping track actually of what they're doing so that I can, they'll be like, I cast this. I'm like, well, actually, you can only cast one of those. Why? Just trust me.
Yeah. Yeah. Y'all fighters start now. Champion fighter, that is all.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. A lot of dwarves and a lot of fighters in our beginning groups.
All right. So you bridged from you started out doing role playing, or I'm sorry, doing board games, and then you got into role playing games. Any specific, can talk about that, how that happened and that.
So mine, I'm an old guy here. I'm 47, which I don't mind admitting, but like, so this is going to sound strange. I was playing war games in grade school. So my dad was a history teacher. Seventh and eighth grade math and history. And so I've always had an interest in history. And I used to get into some of the old West End game war games, you know, World War II, World War I, Civil War was kind of my favorite, you know. So back in the day, my board game was one of these, you know, like super complicated war games from the mid 80s. And then I specifically remember when Star Wars came out, you know, I was a huge Star Wars fan when I was a kid. obviously like everybody else from the late 70s and 80s. And when I saw the book of Star Wars, I didn't know what a role-playing game was. This was 1989. I think I was in seventh grade. And I picked it up thinking it was a board game. Like I saw a game and I thought, I didn't know what role-playing was. So I thought it was a game, like one of the games I've been playing. Like, oh, it has pieces, it'll have rules, I'll put it on the map and everything, that'll be cool. But then I opened it up and was like, what? Like, I don't understand what's going on. I'm supposed to tell a story and I don't, like, this is not a board game. And I usually played a lot of games solo, you know, so there was an old group called the Windy City War Gamers I used to go to as a kid and play some war games, but I mostly played board games, you know, at home on my table. But then I was like, oh, I need other people for this game. So I was disappointed. But then I didn't give up. I was like, well, let me see what this is all about. And I grabbed two or three of my friends and was like, listen, I don't know what this is, but let's just, we all like Star Wars. Let's try this. And that was my first GMing a game. And then it was kind of rough, but I enjoyed it. And then, when I got to high school in 91, that's kind of like, I think it was second edition, the one with the dragon on the, or the knight on the cover. I forget.
It would be second edition.
Yeah, but it wasn't the original second edition. It was like the 2E. It's like the, you know.
Oh, they reprinted the covers, yeah.
Yeah, or maybe something like that, yeah. So anyways, that's what I played with. And I remember, back then my high school was an all-guys school and the D&D club was just insane. It was just exactly as crazy as you'd think it would be with a bunch of guys, the teenage guys playing D&D. And then it wasn't until later, I went to community college, is when Vampire was huge, Vampire the Masquerade. And so I joined that, but I never really liked it. I mean, it was a good system, a good game, but, you know, I didn't like vampires. I wanted to always get back to the dragons and the fantasy stuff. So then I formed my own group in about 96 and then just kept playing and playing and playing.
So do you incorporate any specific language learning techniques or strategies during gameplay?
Yeah, exactly. Right. So for the group here, at UChicago that I run it for, there's been at least three major incarnations. And I think the third one is the one that I think is working the best in terms of language learning, because I will do what's called modeling. So what happens is, basically modeling, because what happens is students will, the classic example I give is when I have a new player, they want to go buy something at the store, right? So they need a healing potion. So, you know, they'll go to the local whatever apothecary and try to find, and even that, like, you know, they're like, what's an apothecary? I'm like, let's Google that, you know? So I always encourage them to have a little notebook open and write down the words they don't know. But anyway, so they go to the apothecary and then they'll be like, I want a healing potion. And then I say, like, as the storekeeper, I'm like, well, hello to you too. You know, like, like I try to make it not transactional. You know, I try to say things like, are you asking me to buy something? You know, and they're like, oh, well, how are you? You know, like in real life, you're not going to walk into some place and be like, give me that. I mean, you could, but it wouldn't be the best, right? You're like, excuse me, I hate to bother you, but, you know, do you have such and such? Oh, yes, over here. So I try to model that kind of interaction when they get, that transactional stuff. And then I threw a curveball one time, because when they went to get a healing potion at the store, I was like, do you have a doctor's note for it? Because I wanted to kind of teach them prescription and going to CVS to get a thing. So I was like, do you have a prescription for that? And they're like, what? Like, what do you mean have a prescription? I'm like, well, it's a potion. It could be pretty, it could, you know, mess with your body. You know, I think you should get a doctor's note first before I sell this to you. So they had to go to the local hospital and then, you know, get a doctor's note to go buy a healing potion, which is basically like, hopefully when they get out to real life and they have to go to see a doctor and get a prescription and go to CVS, they can be like, oh, I kind of already did this in a weird way. So yeah, my group at school tends to be a little, I mean, not completely real life, but there's a lot more weirdly intricate things that happen in my games that I'm not going to subject my, because I have two groups, my domestic speaking, you know, my American friends who I've been playing with forever, like, they're not going to have to do that, you know, but with my students, yeah, because I want to model the kind of interactions they might do in real life, you know, going to buy a sandwich at a store or something. So I try to make sure that my NPCs are always they have personalities, they have different voices, but they're very professional, you know, strangely realistic in a way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I love that. And I think about just anyone that has sort of disabilities and neurodiversity that relate to just picking up on social cues and things like that.
Yeah.
To be able to use role-playing games to teach that, I think about my own kids that are, they've got sort of life skills stuff in school. And And I think, being able to sort of act through these things to help them understand, how these interactions work and to be able to practice it, in a simulated setting, but it's fun. It's not just this sort of, okay, well, no, we're going to like, it feels more natural at that point. And you're not thinking of it from like an academic or whatever kind of standpoint. You're just thinking, I got to go get a healing potion or whatever. And, I need to talk to the barkeep and, get some information or whatever.
Pick
up on that. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's great for small talk, because like one of the things students in our school always complain about is that they don't feel they have small talk skills. They don't know what to talk about or stuff like that. And I think that, yeah, like that bar example, like just getting information is a great little small talk, situation. I mean, of course we'll make it fun and interesting for them, but it's like, I'm not going to have the barkeep go crazy or something, but they're definitely going to be like, they're going to warm up to the information. So it's like, hey, I think we should have a little, ale as we talk about this. And they'll be like, okay. And then like, they're drinking and it's like, so what do you want to know again? And why do you want to know it? And then get them to, output and also not just speak from a, like, I need this, but like, form a relationship with the barkeep, so that they know that if they go back to that character, they know how to interact with that character. And then, that could be like a boss at work or something, it's like somebody you can always see again and again and again.
Yeah. I can also thinking about, my daughter struggles with picking up on, like sarcasm and metaphors and a lot of stuff like that. Where it's like, if you're not saying what you mean, it's like, okay, is that, and I mean, she's working on it and getting better, and she'll stop. She goes, "Is that a metaphor?"
That's great. That's great. But, I love it.
I'm thinking about, okay, well, you have to interact with a local thieves guild, they never say what they actually mean. And so to be able to sort of have to navigate that to figure out, well, what are they actually saying here?
Yeah. And that's so great, because it's like, it's really the same skills that an international student learning English has to go through, because sure, they're going to have the cultural knowledge in their own context. But yeah, like English metaphors, English, sarcasm is really tricky to pick up on. So I get to simulate that for them in this comfortable setting where they can explore that, so that if they make a mistake, I can, instead of being a real person and being like, well, I cannot, I can make a joke, or I can slowly disarm that tension and then bring them back to a normal way, or not normal, but a typical way of interacting with someone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They can transfer out in the real world, hopefully.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Idioms and there's so many applications there.
So many. Yeah.
Wow. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
So what kind of feedback have you gotten from students? I'm interested in sort of faculty and other reactions too, kind of across the board.
Yeah. I think the latter is more interesting. Students like it, they'll buy into it pretty quickly. I've had students who are like in economics, and they'll buy into the role-playing group because they want to improve their English. I think most of my students, though, are typical gamers to begin with. They might be board gamers coming to role-playing. They might be role-playing already in their home country, in their own language. But from the student's point of view, I don't think I've gotten any pushback, let's say, for using role-playing or board games. But the faculty is a different story, yeah. Yeah. It's probably everything you're thinking of, you know. It's not academic, you're just playing games. I don't know why you're doing this, you know. And especially with languages, because it's funny, I'll have other people in different departments talk to me, kind of like you're doing, because they want to apply it. They're kind of thinking outside the box. They want a new, like, for example, Harris is the public policy school, and there's a lot of international students there. And I was talking with one of the teachers about how to use hegemony in their class, you know, because hegemony is a great class simulator, you know. It's got economics, it's got public policy, it's got all this stuff built into it. So those kind of schools, you know, I think they're trying, and they're asking me because I'm kind of the board game guy here now. And but other language faculty people are like, no, we can't do that, or, you know, this is it's not, you know, academic, you know. And I'm just like, yeah, but you're teaching languages like me. Like, you know, because I do have the freedom where my students, we don't have midterms or finals. They're in my classes and we're learning. Whereas the other languages here, sometimes they're on that schedule. They have midterms, they have finals, they have weekly tests. They have to have benchmarks for certain academic purposes. And they're just really scared to make a jump or try to experiment a little bit, because if it backfires, those students could, you know, be in a bad place, you know, academically, and it's hard to fix that. But, you know, that's what I'm trying to do, is model a class where you could incorporate this stuff, and with official assessments, because that's the whole point of my research, was like, it's not just using a game in the classroom for output. It's like, this can be assessed, and that could go on a student's record. And here's how you would do that. But A lot of instructors are set in their ways, let's just say.
Sure. And I mean, and that's understandable. You know, you learned it this way. This is the way, you know, this is the way you're supposed to do it. And
right.
And totally get that. And yeah, it's dangerous to say, hey, we're going to do something completely different. And what if it doesn't work? And yeah, you know, people are paying a lot of money for these classes and
right,
stuff.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I mean, you care about the students, you care about your professional reputation, you care about the school's reputation, and there's a lot of pressure. Oh, but...
Indeed.
And traditional, you know, academic standards and, you know, and all that, and that mean well, and are there for a reason.
Right.
Yet at the same time...
Yeah, no, exactly. And that's why, like, you know, hopefully, since I have the freedom to be a little more flexible, yeah, maybe I'm trying to set that standard or set that benchmark where, you know, like, okay, if you want, because I did have a couple of the Spanish department's been awesome. They've been like, let's do this. Like, for some reason, some of the instructors there are really open, and Portuguese too. They're in the same department, but like, yeah, they're a little more like, yeah, how do I do this? Or how do I do that? You know, they're willing to be a little more flexible with their instruction. And then off the record, not like, I guess this is on the record, but it's not secret. But at Northwestern, I talked with a professor, a German professor, who's using D&D in his group, and they're doing D&D in German. So, like, yeah, we became fast friends because, yeah, he's doing the same kind of thing. But his requires a lot more translation on the students' part because they're American students learning German. My students already have a certain level of English. I'm just inserting more of the real life context into the role playing. So, yeah. So, I mean, there are people who are trying, you know, and it's not like anyone's stopping me here. So that's good.
Yeah.
Like, okay, whatever, do your thing.
Role-playing games are pretty big in Germany, so you know,
it's
immediately useful skill to learn that if you
He was always telling me about, like, how hard it is to translate certain things like Warhammer into, you know, German. It's like there's like four or five different ways to do it. I'm always like, oh yeah, that's okay, I just use Warhammer because it's up to the students to understand that terminology.
All right. Cool. You just rescued a genie from the hands of an Ifriti, and it offers you three wishes to help you achieve your goals to improve lives. What do you wish for?
Well, I would not be doing my duty unless I said, as the first wish, I wish for a million more wishes. So that's the first wish. But if that's off the table, if I can't do that, I would say, it's funny. So, oh, by the way, just to contextualize this, are we talking about like me in real life or me in game?
Yeah, you can go either way.
Okay. Because, like, for example, I've always said, me in real life, one of the wishes would be everyone has to live in a foreign country for at least 1 year. Right? Everyone needs more perspective on other people and how they live and the experiences they go through. So that's my first wish, would be like everyone, I wish everyone has to live in a foreign country for 1 year so that everyone gets the experience of being frustrated with language, culture, other people, other whatever. And there might be more tolerance, you know, across the board, if that were true. The second one is maybe I wish for a little more understanding from everybody, a little more patience and understanding too, to kind of go along with, because I think that would be great for any, not just, you know, culture and language, but for just human to human interaction in general. And then I don't know, the third one is tricky because, yeah, no, I'm going to go with the million more wishes for the third wish so that I'm covered. So if I don't think of anything now, I can always wish for it later. And if my first two wishes, because it isn't a freebie, so there could be a little negative outcome. It could be like everyone has to live in a foreign country, but then they can't move back home ever. At least I have some wishes to fix that when the freebie tries to trick me with certain things.
All right. So what one message would you like to give educators or institutions considering implementing similar methods?
Do it. Yeah. I think that the biggest barrier is just doing it. You know, I people research it, they experiment with it, but they never do it. You know, they think about it, they might try it one or two times, but they don't commit to it because it'll fail. I failed many times. Like the first time I tried D&D, it failed miserably because I didn't anticipate the fact that in D&D, what is the ultimate conflict resolution in D&D? Well, I'm going to kill the person. So the very first game, one of the very first scenes, I was running, Phandalin, the Mines of Phandalin. And they went into Phandalin and they were supposed to get a room. But for some reason, the three students who were playing didn't want to pay for the room. And then the barkeep was like, well, you can't stay here unless you pay. And they were like, no, we're going to stay here. And they walked up and then kicked the door down and started sleeping in the bed. So I had the town guard come and be like, what are you doing? And they killed the town guards without even talking to them. So then I was just sort of like, oh, okay. So I had more town guards come and then more. And then I decided I'm going to TPK because this is ridiculous if this is what they're going to do. So it's going to fail when they try it. You know, I had to be like, oh, that's right. Yeah. So I had to find ways to kind of make D&D more talking and less fighting, because other systems do that. But D&D is kind of notorious for the, okay, murder hobo, you know, thing where it's like, okay, I'm just going to stab and steal. But not everyone plays like that, you know? So it was just more of getting players to understand. But anyways, the point is that when this friction starts, teachers will usually drop it. They don't want to deal with that. And I'm just saying, stick with it, you know, do it, you know, modify it. It even says in the rule book, change what you don't like. You know, it's not like D&D is like, you have to do this way. You know, they even say, if you don't like something, change it, because it's about having fun. And in the academic context, it's about having fun, but also being, you know, assessing students. And then lastly, it's also about like doing it. You can't just like do it a couple of times, like really try to. So I think the longevity of what I'm doing is proving to be, or it proves me, at least in my brain, correct, because I'm still able to keep doing this I've done it for about 2 years now, and board games, role playing is in the classroom. So, you know, just do it. That's what I'm trying to say, I guess.
So you started this with a club and then moved in the classroom.
Right. Yeah. So I wanted to kind of have an I wanted to collect anecdotal data first to see what would happen and stuff like that. Now the board game. Okay. So two paths. The board game was in class. That was always in class. But at first it was for fun. And then I did the research and did it for assessment purposes. The role-playing game was a club first, and then I'm still actually slightly moving it into the context of the classroom, because I need to, I need to work on an instructor's guide, you know, like a DM guide, but for teachers who want to use it in the classroom, or at least for me and wanting it in the classroom, because, yeah, there is a lot more to, you have to account for, like I said, you can't have murder hobos running around. That doesn't really help with the speaking, at least in my classroom. So right now it's in a group with sometimes playing in the classroom as for anecdotal data. Because, I mean, you know, my future research is going to be about D&D physically in the classroom too.
Yeah, no, but I mean, that's a, you know, for someone that wants to try it, being able to try it on a, you know, either as an extracurricular club thing, to kind of test things out there, kind of work out the bugs first.
Perfect. Yes, exactly. And,
I'm even thinking about when I was in high school and all the days where it was just like, pop in a movie or something like that. And, and to be able to do that instead, on those days or, you know, the last day before break or something like that, to be able to kind of test it out in those situations, before you make it kind of more, formal academic, apply it affects your grade kind of thing.
Yeah, we call that high stakes. Yeah, there's like low stakes and high stakes. And the high stakes stuff, yeah, you kind of have to be careful, like I was saying, but it is possible. So yeah, you start with the low stakes and then figure out the pitfalls and the bonuses and all that stuff. And then, yeah, then you finally, you try it in the high stakes a couple of times. If it works, you keep doing it. Right.
Okay. So what one message would you like to give to skeptics or individuals hesitant to embrace unconventional teaching methods like this?
It's here. this isn't like, you know, the reason why I'm able to do this is because there's many older people like me who played this back in the 80s and 90s and are now in positions of, you know, whatever, not authority, but just we're out everywhere. So this is like, you know, D&D is a huge thing, obviously, you know, back in the day, but even now because of things like Critical Role and I mean, there's many role players out in the world, and it's not just a niche thing anymore like it was maybe in the 90s and the 80s, even the aughts to a certain extent. But gaming is here in our culture, and it is here to stay. So rather than kind of figure out ways not to do it, you know, exploit the availability of all the resources like you and your publishings and the kind of classes I'm doing and try to find ways to integrate it rather than fight it because it's here. It's part of the mainstream culture.
Yeah. And I mean, more so, you know, fifth edition is the most popular ever. It's
right.
You know,
it's
still growing. More people are getting exposed to it all the time. So as they grow up, and, you know, become professors or whatever it is, you know, they're going to want it too. So yeah, that's a really good point. It's here. It's sort of like trying to pretend the internet's going to go away. So
right. Exactly. Yeah. And instead of being like, how do we keep these kids off their phones in the classroom? Be like, how can you use the phones for your purpose so that they're not doing what they want to do, but what you want to do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So any projects that you're working on that you can talk about?
Yeah. So like I said, I'm doing I'm in the anecdotal evidence collection stage of, you know, D&D in the classroom as a resource, plus RPGs. Cause there's actually a couple other systems I like too. Mouse Ritter, which is like D&D, but for you're playing mice. I'm trying to see if that would be a better, playing a character or just playing an anthropomorphic, however that word is, I'm an English teacher, I promise, anthropomorphized, you know, creature might be easier, you know, when they're not playing that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I'm just trying out different systems to see which one students react to and do the most output with. I mean, it's been D&D so far. So that's my first one. And there's other, there's a lot of stuff in the pipe, but nothing, that's the thing I think I'm focusing on right now. Because I did the board game one, now I want to do the role play one, and then at some point it's going to be some conglomeration of those things together.
Cool. That's awesome. I love it.
Yeah.
All right. So we will have all your contact information in our show notes, but where is the one best place that you'd like people to start to learn more about you or to contact you?
You can contact me at, if you go to the esl.uchicago.edu, that's our website for our department here. You can see me and my contact information, sdunkel@uchicago.edu. I think, yeah, we have a blog that, you know, hopefully we can link this to so that people can, you know, get the word out more. But there are some links to other things that I've put on our blog. So just go to that website and then, you know, kind of click around and find the blog, and then you'll see some more resources for educators that I've recommended for, you know, trying to get board games or role-playing games into the classroom.
All right. Well, Shane, thanks so much for coming on the show. Everyone, check out those links in the show notes.
Thank you very much, Dale.
That was so cool. Shane, thank you so much for coming on this show. And we've got some kind of exciting plans down the pike in a few years that might relate to this in some ways, but lots of work before any announcements. But before we wrap up, I want to take a moment to thank our incredible Patreon supporters. Your support enables us to create and share our supplements and adventures, making tabletop role-playing games more inclusive and accessible to everyone. Now, for those who haven't joined us on Patreon yet, we offer just a huge treasure trove of exciting benefits across different tiers. For just $2 a month, you can gain access to our exclusive Discord community, where you can engage with other fans and our team of creators. You also get advance notice of upcoming guests, allowing you to submit your questions for our shows ahead of time. Starting at $5 a month, you unlock even more benefits. This includes access to The Lair, our extensive online compendium. Thousands of things there, featuring all of our creations, exclusive content just for our supporters, and previews of upcoming publications. You also get access to our Foundry VTT content and participate in the Worms Workshop, where you can collaborate with our creative team to design characters, places, and other game elements that become a part of Andovir, our Access Punk world, and included in future publications. Higher tiers come with even more perks, like full digital copies of all of our publications, loot boxes, and having me personally run games for you. And thanks to our Patreon supporters, we're able to give away over $500 each month in free products to those who can't afford them, making our work accessible to everyone. So join us at patreon.com/wormworkspublishing and become a part of our mission to make lives better through tabletop role-playing games. And that link is also in the show notes. Thanks so much for all of you who support us so that we can help you change lives. Now, if you see the show being helpful, hit that like button on YouTube. And if you'd like to see more, subscribe. If you know people who need to hear this, please pass it on to them. And if you, like me, think everyone needs to hear this, pass it on to your social media friends. And don't forget those podcast ratings. Thank you so much for joining us to make lives better with tabletop games.